Welcome to another exciting episode of the NIDS View, a weekly show of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies, where we are advancing peace, promoting stability, and helping you to think deterrence. Each week, we will discuss and analyze a recent topic and provide insight to how it affects our national deterrence. The view of the hosts and guests are their own. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to the NIDS View. Happy New Year to everyone listening. The NIDS View is a production of the NIDS Podcasting Network, keeping you informed about the importance of deterrence in this season of peace and time. We reflect on not only our past, but our future. I'm Jim Petrosky, president and co-founder of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies, and today we're conducting part one of two regarding the discussion of our NIDS research insight, establishing a proposed nuclear posture review for 2026 and beyond. And I'm joined by my ever-present, ever-prepared friend and colleague, Curtis McGiffin, Vice President for Education and co-founder of NIDS, and also an all-around nice guy.
So, thanks, Jim. I'm glad you didn't call me omnipresent.
Yeah, well, you might be that too, if I understood what that meant. So, Curtis, you know, we put this NPR out about a month ago.
Yeah,
and just prior to the administration's issuance of the national security strategy, I don't know if you had insight on that or not. I'm not going to ask, but you might remember that you, Kirk Fancher, and I, we conducted a seminar with the great Peter Husey just a few weeks ago. So just to start us off here, why are we still talking about this?
Well, Jim, I think it's just extremely important right now with the way things are laying out as we close out 2025 and get started on 2026, just understanding where we are in this nuclear, I don't know, complexity that we are living in these days. And I think there's just still a lot of people in the world, in the United States, in our government, who seem to kind of think that we really don't need to do anything other than business as usual. That at some point in time, if we're just patient enough, that our adversaries will sort of come around to our thinking and sort of give up these nasty weapons and stop threatening the world and the U.S.'s place within it. And I just think that that's wishful thinking. I just don't think that they're... I think we're beyond that at this point. That may have worked 20 years ago, maybe even 15 years ago, but not anymore, not today. And Jim, you know, right around the corner, February 5th of 2026 is the expiration of the New START Treaty. And it'll be over.
Our treaty with whom?
That's a good. So I get your point. So there's this treaty that we signed with Russia, and many people still believe we're in this treaty, but
we are.
Yeah, and that the Russians are still good partners, and that we should just snap our fingers and with a handshake extend the treaty with a handshake over another year. And and this is this would be folly, and we'll kind of go through some of that today. I think there was a very, very interesting Senate testimony by Rose Gottmuller and Marshall Billingsley on the 10th of December. You can watch it on YouTube. It's entertaining and mostly informative. And two very, very smart, experienced people. Representing two sides of the argument, but have come together. They were both on the Strategic Posture Commission, and so they both agreed to those findings that came out in late 1983 on that Strategic Posture Commission. And so now we're still sort of wrestling. It's been 2 years, Jim, and we're still admiring sort of the recommendations, and no one has really done enough to turn the corner on this. And since we're getting started on this, Jim, Ambassador Billingsley, who was part of Trump administration 1.0's arms negotiating team, gave quite an interesting testimony out there. And he said two things that I found very interesting. One of them was that If we were to just extend the New START treaty another year, we would essentially provide relief to the Russians because they're worried about what we're going to do essentially here after February 6th. And they're already not following the treaty, right? They suspended it.
Yeah, I was going to say, if they're really worried about it, they should check the treaty. Right. It's in the language that we're supposed to
do. Exactly. And to her credit, Ms. Gottmeiler clearly points out to the Senate that she called it seizing the treaty, like seizing it, like stopping it, is not in the treaty language and is thus a violation of the treaty. Mm-hmm. But in the same testimony, she says that, you know, it would be beneficial to the arms control world if we were to go ahead and take this this offer and extend on a handshake another year. I don't understand how we compute that a handshake agreement with Russia, who cannot negotiate a peace over Ukraine, is somehow more trustworthy with nuclear weapons. Or an agreement with nuclear weapons. I don't know. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And so Ambassador Billingsley said, we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't give them a leg up. And by doing that, it would hamstring us in the other things that he thinks we should do. And in his testimony, Jim, he mentioned a few things. I'm going to highlight them here, and we'll be interested to get your comments on this. This is a discussion on our NPR. I promise we're going to get there.
Oh yeah, and he said, I'm ready.
He highlighted for the committee a few of the most salient points, and he said, with urgency, we need to prepare to upload some or all of the nation's hedge warheads. That would be putting more warheads back on our missiles. Plan to deploy Sentinel ICBM in a MIRVed configuration. Increase the planned number of deployed long-range standoff weapons. These would be the new cruise missile for the bombers. Increase the planned number of B-21 bombers, I guess presumably from the 100 that are already programmed to some larger number. He doesn't give a number. Increase the planned production of the Columbia SSBN and their Trident ballistic missile systems. Look to field a Rhode mobile ICBM. Prepare to put a portion of the future bomber fleet on continuous alert status. Develop plans and procedures to reconvert the SLBM launchers and the B-52 bombers that were rendered incapable of launching nuclear weapons under New START. That's why we can't extend that treaty, right? And prepare to keep operating the Ohio-class SSBNs past their current planned retirement dates. Jim, can you tell me what all of those recommendations that Ambassador Billingsley made to the Senate, where you could find an elaboration of all of those recommendations?
I was thinking, you know, I've seen it somewhere because I've been reading about it from some group of people. I believe it was in our NPR that we sent out in our research insight. And, you know, Curtis, what I think is funny, you went down this list before you jump back in because you sort of gave me this rhetorical question here because you knew I read it. I think I helped write it. And anyway, so, and by the way, if you do write something, you ought to read it too, especially with co-authors. Make sure they don't go off the rails. But Curtis didn't. No, look, there's a great piece of this. I want to back up a little bit. You know, why we wrote this NPR is exactly this. You went through a list of things. The Hedge, the Sentinel, the Standoff Cruise Missile, the B-21 is programmed, the planned production of the SSBN, the Field Road Mobile ICBM, the SLBM being hampered by New START, and then the retirement of the current SLBMs. And one of the reasons why we exist as an organization is to make sure that the American public and the leadership at large are aware of what we do, what we as a nation do, what we as the military do, what the leaders do as a nation to deter our adversaries. And I'm going to guess, if you went to your you know, tomorrow at your New Year celebration, and you have your around here, we have we usually use sauerkraut and pork is our thing. I come from a Germanic Polish background.
Teutonic.
Okay. Yeah, you got it. And so I come from that background, but when you're sitting down with your family, I'll bet if you ask around the table, how many people are aware that we have this hedge for our nuclear weapons? Mm-hmm. How many people are aware that we have, that the Russians are building weapons to launch their nuclear weapons that we have taken off the table and had available to us? These are the things I think that's most important, and why this NPR that establishes in such a way, and for those that heard me talk about the national security strategy, written in a way that the average citizen can read it and understand it. How many ways in which we can discuss this that people will understand that there's a lot going on, and our leaders have made these decisions in the past, but need to look to the future, whether we're going to do it. Because adversaries are taking advantage of some of these things. They really are. I would say if our adversaries were saying, well, we're no longer going to have submarines, I'm going to go, that's an interesting thing for us. Oh, and we're also going to get rid of all our soldiers. That would be interesting. And we're not going to use technology. That would be, I'd start taking advantage of it too. We need to stop giving them that advantage. And so this proposed NPR was designed and again, great job in writing it. You and Kirk Fancher, primary authors on this, but a lot of people involved, I know. But the work that you guys did on this was to look at the real world from a realistic standpoint and open those up. And it's important for our adversaries, our citizens, our leaders, not just those of you out there in the audience in the deterrence community, those of you that go out and interact with other people in the community, to be able to describe these things. Because with that are informed citizens that understand us. Because I'll bet most people don't even know that our bombers are off alert. I really do. I think people think every time they see an airplane fly over and they go TWA, that means it's it has three weapons associated with it. I don't know. Does TWA even exist anymore? Okay. No, it was a joke. It fell flat apparently. Okay. But you get the idea that people don't, people do not know that we don't do that anymore. That's important.
I would say that, since the end of the Cold War, we have deterred with a dyad, not a triad, because the bombers are not on alert. And we become a triad when the bombers could be brought on alert. However you want to couch that. We say we're a triad because we could bring the bombers on alert at any one time. And look, this is it's all fun and interesting when we think about what we want in the future, but the reality is what we have now and what we have in the future that we're anticipating. All of the open intel that even the U.S. government is willing to tell us, which I think is still an incredibly low estimate, is China will have 1,500 warheads by 2035. You include that with the quote-unquote 1,500 warheads that Russia claims to have. And if we only have 1,550 warheads and they're working together, how's that math work out for you? Yeah. And so we have to start from there. What is the position of strength? In no terms of competition is strength necessarily justified by saying, a 60-40 advantage to the other side is somehow weaker. No matter how much technology we want to claim that we'll have, that our stuff is better, right? It still has to survive the first attack. And, the DIA released in May, the estimate that China will have 700 ICBMs by 2035. That did not make the testimony, by the way. And so they already have more launchers. They'll have a lot more launchers. And if we're going to have a counter-force strategy going into the future, we need to have the forces capable of conducting a counter-force strategy. Now, what most folks will tell you in and around the Pentagon is, we have non-nuclear means, right, conventional weapons that we'll use in place of a nuclear to take out a nuclear weapon. And my response to that is, great, if you can get there, if you can make that happen. When we think about deep buried hardened targets, how many of those did we use in Iran of the inventory we had? The answer is most. And, you know, and oh, by the way, we'll have to have new weapons because those weapons, those massive ordnance penetrators are probably not going to fit under a B-21. So you have to have new methodologies. And look, no one is saying that conventional weapons don't have a role play in deterrence. We've never said that. What we're saying is that we need to rely more, not less, on our nuclear arsenal for a number of different reasons. And our NPR, I think, really lays this out. And a couple of things before we move on, Jim, is that so the NPR is somewhat prescient. The NPR was written without knowing what the NSS, the National Security Strategy, right, which came out a few weeks ago, was going to ask for. In my opinion, I have an article that has just been released called The Case for Deterrence, What the 2025 NSS Got Right. That article sort of lays out sort of how it's what it describes as its deterrent needs and its nuclear desires, how this NPR really fits into that nicely. We wrote this NPR, Jim, with the understanding of this would be the implementer of the 2023 Strategic Posture Commission report. And I think for the most part it is. It might be slightly more aggressive than what they called for, but it acknowledges all the circumstances that they demand and as being necessary to ensure peace, stability, and deterrence in the future moving forward. And one thing's for sure, we can't keep doing business as usual as we look at this moving forward. And so I think this NPR does that, and it does so from a maximalist perspective, depending upon how you want to couch it, the opposite of deterrence minimalism. And so what we do is the NPR clear-eyed and without apology sort of eschews all of that minimalistic design. Now, there are many out there, Jim, who will tell us that we don't need to match the numbers of our adversaries. And we can debate that on the periphery. What is parity, right? Is parity one for one? Is parity, 0.98 for one? What is parity? And again, we can argue around the periphery about how much conventional or technological advantage do we have that makes up for not having to have one for one. But what we never think about when we think about parity is, what does the adversary think is parity? And the adversary thinks parity is superiority.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no. So you're talking about parity. We're going to get into numbers, and when we do part two, we're going to get into some specifics of implementation.
Right.
And so, yeah, I want to back up a little bit because I think a couple of things that you mentioned are really important to understand why the NPR, this NPR, is so important to the nation. And that is that, and you see it really for those that haven't listened to, and I'll admit I didn't read I did not read a testimony, but I have read it from the Honorable Marshall Billingsley. And it highlights here the same thing that was a motivator for us in the new NPR, this proposed NPR. And that's this: the world is changing, and we are seeing what the adversary wants to do. When we start to see a very quick or rapid rise in a number of nuclear weapons and a number of delivery systems and capabilities that are being put on the table, it's not just a numbers game with nuclear weapons. It's also a numbers game of how well you can deliver and where you can deliver and what ways you can deliver that end up causing confusion. You know, what you were talking earlier about is what are the number you need, what to counterstrike. And of course, deterrence is we don't want to have to counterstrike. We don't want to strike at all. We want to bring about a fear in our adversary in such a way that they are going to just back off, stop, move the needle to some other direction in their national work. But right now, what you're seeing, especially in China, is you're seeing a very aggressive buildup in their nuclear weapons capabilities, as well as, you know, what is being forecast is a fair number of nuclear weapons that'll be on the table that they can use to change what we are going to do when they take actions. And that's their deterrence. And we need to keep that from happening. We do not want to be deterred from looking at our national interest, or worse yet, from having a country the way that we want to run our country. But if someone else is calling the shots, which is what seems to be happening right now with China, we have to do something aggressive. And so I don't care, you know, numbers wise is one issue of this. And it really gets beat up too many times. You know, people talk about nuclear weapons like, well, at one time we had X number of weapons and now we have so many weapons and we need X number. I don't know what that number is. I've said this many times on the podcast. I don't know what the number is. I know in the past, I know what the number was because it deterred the adversaries from taking action. So now we have to, you know, the numbers game is a piece of this. But what I'm seeing our adversaries doing, and correct me if I'm wrong, Curtis, but I think we'll talk about it in part two, is we need capabilities, multiple types of capabilities, so the adversary knows we're serious about delivery in multiple ways. So they have to change their strategy, and hopefully their strategy will be, let's just stop and go back to, you know, a world order. Your thoughts there, Curtis?
Yeah, so my thoughts here are this. So our adversaries are always utilizing their strategic arsenals and their non-strategic arsenals with regard to nuclear weapons. It is about gaining advantage. Mm-hmm. It is not balancing our power, our nuclear power. It might be about balancing our conventional power. Because they can't stand toe-to-toe with us against our conventional prowess, which I think is somewhat could be viewed as somewhat destabilizing. But when it is about gaining advantage. This is why Russia builds novel weapons that circumvent the New START treaty, and they do so not because look, what's the spirit of a treaty, Jim? It's to be stabilizing, right? To stabilize the world, to be predictable. And to present, here's just enough to ensure our safety. But no, when you build first strike weapons that circumvent the treaty, then the goal is not to create that stability. It's to create a destabilizing advantage.
Yeah, you're destabilized at that point.
Right? And so we tolerate that, and we make excuses for it as a government. I don't care what administration you're talking about. And we've allowed that for all of this time, and it has now come to fruition, right? So for the most part of New START, these novel weapons were a dream. Now they exist, right? And so now we are late to need to figure out how to develop them. How to develop a counter to them is what I'm trying to say here. And so it is about how American deterrence, Western deterrence is about tamping down advantage, making sure that they can't gain advantage over us. Eastern or autocratic deterrence is about gaining advantage in which to threaten us into inaction. Okay, and these are two different perspectives in how the deterrence game is played. Yeah. And to some degree, they're almost yin and yang or counterintuitive or however you want to couch it, because in the end, we're going for different goals. And so we continue to, and that's, I guess what I'm trying to say is that's what business as usual is. And what we have to do is something different. And this NPR calls, I think, for some very different modes of thinking, some different modes of policy, and some different modes of force posturing. And if we can embrace some of those things and not do things differently, we might be able to solve some of this problem. I'll make a note here in the testimony on the 10th by Ambassador Billingsley. He said that no extension of a post of a post-Cold War New START treaty is going to change that effect. We have to leave that post-Cold War formula, right? That bipolar view of the world, and understand that this new world that is now going to include China and to some degree a much more nuclear powerful North Korea, and maybe other powers yet to have emerged.
Yeah, you never know.
He says, quote, "We need a different approach and formula," unquote. And look, that's what he's saying is we can't continue to do business as usual. And what our 2026 NPR offers is exactly what the ambassador calls for, a different approach and a different formula. And I look forward to expanding on that in the next episode.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's a good breaking point here. You know, we've discussed sort of in part one most of the stuff surrounding the concept of the NPR proposed that we had created. And stay tuned for part two next week, in which we're going to discuss some of the grander details related to this NPR. But hopefully we gave you some fodder to think about, talk about. Write to us at nids@thinktoturns.com. Tell us what you think. Tell us what your ideas are. And, of course, we'll get back to you as soon as we can when that happens. And so thank you to our listeners. Thank you for staying with us and hanging on until next week. But until then, we always want you to think deterrence.
Thank you for listening to The NIDS View. This show is produced under the NIDS Podcasting Network, a division of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. NIDS is a 501c3 organization dependent upon donations to provide this podcast and bring about awareness of the peacekeeping value of U.S. strength and our national deterrence. You can catch all of our podcasts or provide feedback at thinktoturns.com. I would like to thank our producer, Kimberly Charrington, our sponsors, and all the fantastic members of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies for making this podcast possible. Stay tuned next week for another exciting and informative The NIDS View.
The NIDS Podcasting Network.